Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It is now 9:00 on September 5th, 2023. And time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission, joining virtually. We have Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President. We have Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO, General Manager, to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. I now introduce our General Manager, John Harlow, who will facilitate the discussion. Morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioner Wolf, Commissioner Olson. We've got lots of good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get right after it. First up is our media update and Aaron Sweeney. Morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, Commissioners. Aaron Sweeney, PR Media Liaison, here this morning to talk about all the things happening in the world of media. So let's see. First off, we had a great Media Day event a couple weeks ago. We actually took some time with line and safety and invited some media out to kind of talk about storms, storm prep, how our crews prepare, safety out there in the field. A lot of times during storms, TV crews can come upon our crews when they're not supposed to. I don't really like that. So it was really nice to get them in front of the crews, get some of those tips that, call us first. We'll go out and meet you. We can walk you through. If you want an interview, we can do that kind of stuff, but don't interfere with the crews who are trying to do their job. So we had some TV out there. We had a bunch of print stories that are coming out that have already come out, and some sort of stories that are coming out later. Some stories on basically life in the day of a lineman during a storm. So we have a few reporters working on stories like that. So a great event. Want to give props to Kelly Stickney, who did a tremendous job of putting this together, getting everybody there, getting line and safety there, and doing a great job. So I just wanted to show you this clip real quick. And hopefully it'll...
Thank you for doing that.
This is from Como News.
Is already getting ready for the winter storm season, and they say preparing now will keep people safe later. Today, there was a meeting to plan for the storms ahead. Snohomish PUD says they trim over 500 miles of trees to prevent them from interfering with power line, but they still warn against approaching anything that appears to be a power line without calling 911.
But if you see power lines down or any lines down per se on poles, regardless of what it is, that you assume it's power lines, you call 911, and then get a hold of us, and we'll come out and deem it safe or unsafe.
Snohomish PUD says power restorations can take a while, so they advise people to put together emergency kit of sorts. They also say people should know how to use a generator and should charge their phones when there's a storm in the forecast.
So really, this is just the beginning of our kind of prep messaging that we're going to be doing over the next few months, getting folks ready for storm season, telling them, to build that emergency kit, things like that. So we had stories in the Herald, Everett Post, Mukilteo Beacon, and like I said, some more stories that are coming as well.
We weren't ignoring you, but our monitors weren't on. So.
No problem.
And oh, by the way, there's a button.
Tricky buttons. We also put out a press release during, it was hot a couple weeks ago. So during that heat wave, we wanted to put out some messaging talking about conservation, telling customers to conserve during the heat, help us out a little bit. It was picked up in a number of occasions and general messaging around that. We've seen some Connect Up coverage lately. Fox News actually came out and did some coverage on us. We've seen a sprinkling around kind of in some print publications. We're actually preparing to do a lot more coverage coming up. We want to do a demo for media and invite them out and show them what that process is like as they exchange the meter. So you'll be seeing more of that. We're being pretty strategic about when we do that and kind of make sure that our teams are ready for that kind of coverage. Just a few other things here. Everett Herald column in August was focused on community events. The September column, like I said, will be focusing on prep for storm season. A couple stories that we worked on, just kind of helping reporters understand future demand. We worked on a battery storage story with clearing up, and then Fox 13 was doing a story on the growing summer demand and did some work with the reporter on that. We weren't quoted in that story, but there's a lot of background work we do with these reporters. We talk them through, help them understand what's going on, and it's just one of those things that kind of helps the story come out really well. And then finally, DEM has a new hazard viewer. And we've put a bunch of information on there kind of about the severe weather, being prepared, pushing people to our outage map and things like that. And then publications real quick. The Wire for September is all about Connect Up, talking about the benefits, and we have some other cool stuff in there. So that's about it.
Thank you. Can you clarify for me, will the up close for linemen working storms, is that for media?
Story that's coming up?
Yeah, you said you were going to have invite media to interact with.
Oh, we did. We did that already.
Oh,
that happened a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what that coverage was from. There's just some stories that may be coming out in a couple weeks that are from that day.
Okay.
They were able to interview the linemen, which is not their favorite thing to do, the linemen, but they did a great job. They were so helpful.
Oh, they love it. They love that.
They did a great job. So yeah, so there's just some more stories that we'll be sprinkling.
Yeah, but, and this is just my thought process, and don't take it as saying do it, but there's a lot behind that in terms of our storm centers, warehousing. So that may be too complicated.
No, we've done stories like that in the past. Yeah, we've done stories like, I think the Amber Herald came out a couple years ago and did like kind of a
overall
story on what we do, what we gear up for storms. Wouldn't be bad. It's never bad to do it again, right?
Oh, I wasn't asking for that. It was just my process. Okay,
all right.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Great job. Thank you, Aaron.
Aaron, I have a quick question.
Yes.
You know, there was an article recently, I might have been in the Seattle Times, about the price of energy going up. Are we, and of course, we've been fairly flat. Are we prepared to answer that question when it comes to us? Or have we thought about putting something out about energy prices?
Yeah, we've actually, that reporter actually reached out to us and kind of wanted to know what our rate increases were like. And so we worked with them just talking about, the thing about our rate increases, they were kind of on the smaller end compared to some of the other folks in the story. So we got pushed toward the bottom of that story. But I think some messaging about that would be a great idea. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Great presentation.
All right. Next up is the new fiber optics agreement. It's in council. Good morning, Nick.
I'm Nick Johnston, telecommunications manager for the district here. And today I'm going to talk to you about a proposed fiber optic cable master license agreement between ourselves and Wave Broadband. So some of the basics, we currently are leasing fibers to Wave Broadband, and we're going to ask you for approval to enter a new replacement agreement for that. Some of the very basic bullet point items on here. I mentioned it's replacing resolution 5285, releasing 12 fibers across 3.74 miles. The new agreement will be five-year term with five automatic renewals for 25 years. And then we have some information on the actual finances behind that. So I like pictures, so we threw this in here. This one's kind of an interesting one because, like most people have recognized in the county, when you're trying to get north on a Friday afternoon, it can be very difficult. We have a geographical kind of a roadblock or dam in our area, and that's true for telecommunications as well. A lot of the other telecom departments or entities around here have had issues with this in the past, and when the district highlighted this in the late 90s, we looked at it a little bit more holistically, and instead of using our standard 36 fiber, we placed a 288 with the intent of leasing to other entities and help them with their issues as well. So what I've highlighted here is the actual route that we're leasing out today. And it differentiates itself from our other stuff in that it is a 288 fiber instead of a 36. We also have cabinets on either side, which function as an interconnect point where third-party vendors can bring their cable to, and we can easily slice to that, make leasing very simple.
Because I haven't been here forever, I would like to know, the yellow along I-5, does that mean that we have cable that goes along the freeway?
No, that's actually just the highlight of I-5.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the cable is where?
It's in the red.
It's in the red.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The green cable is our normal route, and we just highlighted.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yep. So to look back a little bit about the history, in 97-99 is when we actually placed the Delta Crossing 288 fiber. Like I mentioned, that was purpose-built to be leased to other entities. At one time, we had Millinet on that cable, or we still do today. We had Verizon, and BlackRock was the agreement that we're talking about now. In 2006, we signed the original agreement with BlackRock Cable, Resolution 5285. It's been amended over the years to extend it as much as possible. In 2012, the district passed a resolution 5606, which essentially eliminated us from leasing fiber to third-party vendors. The reason behind that was our fiber network is purpose-built for the majority of it, and having third-party vendors or third-party operators on our fiber makes it a little bit more difficult to manage. And if we have an outage or if we have a planned cable realignment, we have to reach out to multiple entities on that, which could delay our work. Like we pointed out here, though, this is specifically on a 288 fiber that was intentionally built for leasing out. So in 2013, Wave purchased BlackRock. So that's why we're talking about Wave instead of BlackRock now. In 2015, we exhausted all potential renewals for the existing lease. And since then, we've been operating on a good faith basis to continue the lease. And what we're presenting now or proposing now is a new lease agreement or license agreement, excuse me, to get us up to date contractually as well.
I just had a little confusion about if we didn't want to, if we felt that we couldn't afford to give up so much in 2012, what changed to make it so that now we feel we can?
Yeah, and I don't have a lot of the history behind that, but essentially it was looking at our fiber network as a whole instead of each individual components. And last year, when we presented the broadband study, one of the key takeaways to that is that it wasn't responsible for us to go and build a whole new network, but what we could do is look at this agreement again and look at requests on an individual case basis to see if it fits our network and if it's not going to be a hindrance to how we operate. And this is a key example of that, and that it really doesn't offer any disadvantage to the district to continue this lease. We are actively looking at rewriting or eliminating 606 so that we do have the ability now to look at it under individual case basis.
Commissioner Olson, do you have any questions?
Just a follow on here is a question I had, but this still offers the district capacity should it need it.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I mentioned, the bulk of our network is 36 fibers,
yeah,
and that's more than enough for us to operate our interconnection between substations and our offices. Yeah. And this is on a 288.
Okay. So, yeah, so Logan, do you have any questions or comments?
Yeah, a quick question. So I remember when we concluded the broadband study, we talked about revising the resolution, as you mentioned, but we also had and I can't remember the bullet, but essentially, we would look for opportunities to partner with others using our fiber. I met with a customer recently who has a strong interest in internet in rural areas. And he asked me if we were looking into, when we install cable, to use a cable with more bundles in it, so that if a third party wants to lease those in the future, we would already have the capacity. And his thought was that the additional cost would be pretty minimal to us to purchase fiber with more, I guess, fibers in it. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we are absolutely looking at that. We don't have a lot of fiber builds planned right now, other than a few minor projects that wouldn't offer any benefit to any other potential user. We do have a couple projects slated that we are putting fiber in, and we are maximizing those bundle counts. So yeah, we absolutely are looking at this.
Great, thank you.
Not at the moment. Okay. Any more questions, Commissioner Logan?
Not at this time.
Thank you.
Right. So in summary, we believe this master license agreement will not negatively affect the district in any way. We think it's a good partnership with WAVE, and it offers more more opportunities or more competition across the Delta River. We believe that it provides significant benefit for Snohomish County citizens by providing additional options, like I mentioned, and we recommend that the commission approve the new MLA between Snowbud and Broadband.
So if something were to change, and these are five automatic renewals, we could, at that time, if we needed to, we could make a change.
Yes.
It says they're automatic, but if they are automatic.
Basically, if nobody has any issues with it, then it automatically renews.
Okay, yes, okay. Yeah.
It provides us every 5 years the opportunity to reassess if needed. We don't envision that being an issue right now due to the excess capacity on this line.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Nick. Great job.
I have a quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
And maybe this is for our general counsel, but we still have resolution 5606 in place. So does that forbid the commission to go ahead and approve this agreement? Do we need to rescind that at the next meeting?
No, not that I'm aware of. We are in the process of reevaluating, but that current resolution didn't prohibit the extension of existing leases like this one with Wade.
Thank you.
So this is just existing leases. Sorry about that.
No, I think the existing lease did expire, but we're continuing to lease them under. And we did do an exception to 5606 with the lease to City of Everett under the filtration plant fiber that we placed. So we have done this in the past. But again, we are looking at rewriting or eliminating 5606.
Okay, yeah. All right, thank you. Thank you.
All right, next up is our Connect Up quarterly update. Kevin Labor, Tim Epp. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. Good to see you all, council here. So, Connect Up program quarterly update for the commission. So, I'm here with Tim Epp as program leaders. Last time we provided our update was on June 27th. And today, basic updates for you. So, just our goal today is to provide an update on the progress of the program and to talk about our next steps. So for our agenda today, program schedule and budget review, and then we'll also look at our new phase, which is the deployment phase that we're in right now. And so we'll have a progress report that we'll share regarding that, regarding our meter deployment, continuing the base station network deployment, communications with our customers and internally, and then also talk about a new area about delivering and planning new benefits for our customers and for the district, and then talk about next steps. Just a quick reminder of the different components of the Connect Up program. Jeff Cullen leading the AMI network project, Doris Payne and Brad Acey leading the systems integration and the meter data management system projects. Electric meter deployment, Travis Olson leading, Kevin Pressler leading the meter deployment project, and AMI Technologies being led by Adam Peretti. So schedule review for the program. So we moved in away from our from the implementation phase, and we're now in our deployment phase. And so this is an opportunity where we're starting to install meters. So we had a successful friends and family deployment in June and July. And in August, we started our general deployment for the general public.
Can we go back to the previous slide just for a moment? So I was just under AMI Technologies with Adam Brady. What does he do?
What does he do? Great question. So this group was a result of a few years ago, we did a study with other utilities and to find out how they implemented AMI. And one of the big lessons learned that they had was have an operations team already ready. So they're part of the project. And so a team that's ready to monitor our systems and make sure everything's commissioned properly. So that team was put in place, Adam started about a few years ago, I think, and then put together a team. And so they're currently monitoring our AMI systems.
Where's your communications in this diagram?
So the communications is all, it's throughout, yes.
It's like an overlay of this.
It is. And so, yeah, we have Aaron Sweeney, Dave Kruger helping out with that. And so they're leading out our communications effort. DMAP's involved with it quite a bit too, but it's throughout the program.
Okay, and I've had a few people who have asked me about how do you do the opt-out option? And so are we providing information about that with our all benefits? Are we also talking about that? And if so, how? Or is it just by request only?
We are, yeah, Tim will talk about it more, but there is a notification we do give to our customers. Before the meter shows up at their house, we give them details on how to request an opt-out and how to go through the process.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. You bet. Okay, so during deployment phase, yeah, day one benefits as once a customer receives their meter, Tim will be talking more about those benefits in just a few minutes along with the customer communications that are now taking place with our customers. And during the deployment phase, we'll also wrap up our base station installations. Program budget. So we're holding steady right now. Currently, original budget that was approved January 2021 was $93.2 million. And we're still projecting being under budget by $2 million roughly. We still have no plan for using a contingency budget.
You know the question.
A few meetings I've learned that, so I better bring it up. So still no plans to use a contingency budget, so this still represents our baseline budget.
Can you remind us how much our contingency budget was or is?
It was 10%, so about $9 million.
Thank you.
Welcome. And still under budget. It's mostly due to labor costs not being as high as we thought they would be throughout the program. So there still is a risk with the meter installations with inflationary pressures potentially for that. So there might be an opportunity. I wouldn't want to say call it an opportunity, but there might be a need for this later on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But a phenomenal job of keeping it on track, given all the obstacles.
Yeah, it's been
supply chain, everything. I commend you.
Well, the project managers and the teams have done a great job keeping things within scope and being able to respond to changes too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One other question. As we implement the new salary administration program, we have quite a few non-represented people in the Connect Up program. Is that going to affect the budget?
So they will not be full-time FTEs. It will be more, or sorry, these are temporary labor, so we have a fixed salary for them. So I haven't seen the new salary information myself. So
yeah, we're going to be voting on that this afternoon.
Okay.
So I assume it's coming. It will be happening. I'm not sure when it's going to be activated or
Tim's got some more information, Tim.
Yeah, Commissioner, one thing I would probably add is that now that we're done with our implementation phase, that was a substantial number of district non-represented employees were involved in that phase. Now that we're heading into the deployment phase, we should see, we're seeing a reduction in the non-represented employees. And so I don't anticipate that being a huge pressure on the bottom line. It will impact some, but not substantially.
Not significantly. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point. And yeah, even with the under budget right now, that's more than enough to cover the risk there.
Good.
Okay. Any other questions on the budget?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so now we'll jump into a progress update during our deployment phase. So looking at demeanor deployment, our AMI communications network, our communications with customers and internally, and delivering and planning new benefits. First item here is our meter deployment progress. So we're starting to see more shipments from Census, who is our meter manufacturer. And so we have over 3,200 electric meters in our warehouse now, and over 4,500 water meters, along with 1,400 communication modules that the water meters have to be mirrored up with in order to fully work. So we are seeing meters coming in. Census will be providing our fourth quarter forecast for meters. We'll be getting that in the next week or so. I was hoping to have it by today, but we just don't have it yet. But we'll be getting plans for that. But we do have another 3,000 or 4,000 meters. I think it's 4,000 meters that will be showing up over the next month. So we have enough to keep us busy right now. And we're still careful in hiring our technicians. We don't want to get ahead of that and having them sit around. So we're building up a little bit of an inventory and then lagging with the hiring of technicians to install those meters.
Is there a quality control step after they arrive, or is that
there is
all done before?
There is. Well, it's done before, absolutely, at the manufacturer. And then we have a basic percentage of meters that we do test out, make sure that they're accurate and well of our quality testing. So it'll be a sample testing.
Thanks. You got all the answers. That's great.
You bet. All right. So as I mentioned, friends and family meter deployment was successful, completed in June and July. So we were really happy with that. Learned a lot of great things. On the electric side, they have hired lead meter technicians, so they are undergoing training right now, and then they'll start doing installations in the coming month. Also, for the water side, they've hired their 5 employees for their installations, along with the box and lid replacements that they're working on. So to date, well, this is as of a week ago. We had over 400 water meters installed and over 300 electric meters installed. And they're out there installing both of these today, so this number will keep moving up. But we're excited about this because it does represent that meters that are working well, the system is working well, and so we're really excited about that. Upcoming activities, we have, we'll award our public works contract for deployment during our next commission session. As you'll see today, we had a non-responsive, we had multiple bids come in for our electrician position. We're rejecting those because of non-responsiveness. And then, but we do have a path forward. Once they are rejected formally this afternoon, we're working with legal and contracts and purchasing on our next step, which we will share in the consent agenda at the next commission meeting.
Just a heads up, I will have a couple questions on that particular
okay.
bid recommendation, but I'll do it under the bid report.
Okay, great. Sounds good. Let's see, other items, take upcoming activities, meter technician interviews. So we had over As I mentioned, over 70 applicants for our general meter installation positions. And so those interviews are taking place right now. And we'll continue our general deployment of meters, electric and water meters throughout the district.
Only 70 applicants. That surprises me.
Huh. Yeah. So that, and then we'll have other interviews taking place later in the year too.
No, I was surprised.
Yeah, well, I know there's a number of people excited to work here, so.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that we would be inundated.
Yeah.
Hello.
All right. And then as far as risks and challenges, talk about meter supply chain. That's always been a risk throughout the program. And so we continue to work with Census, meeting with them, getting a report or meeting with them over the phone every 2 weeks to talk about their delivery plans with that. So keeping a lot of pressure with that. They are seeing with their manufacturing facility, they had some challenges having to hire back a number of new people for assembling the meters. With that, the quantities of meters were lower at first, but they're ramping up, becoming experienced, and so they're seeing a good throughput now with those. There are some delays with some of the shipping between the manufacturer and getting here, and so Census is now working on that piece, but shipments still are coming in. It's just slower than we would want. And as far as big wins around the deployment, so meter deployment, as mentioned, successful friends and family deployment, great opportunity to, with a small number of meters, about 31 meters that were out there, and to be able to test these real time to make sure our processes are working right, and making adjustments, trying to make improvements to our processes. And then as far as the survey was sent out to these recipients, and very positive experiences that they saw. Departmental teamwork, very huge lift for this part of the project. And so all departments participating did a great job, did their job well. And the meter exchange opportunities. So there are some meters that are in challenging locations where we had a meter readers going out there. It's challenging to read them. And so the AMI meter is a great opportunity to have that installed so we can read it remotely. And so one example is off of I-5, meter was swapped out there. And so now we can read it remotely and not have to go into it. Potentially unsafe location. Other wins, systems and processes worked. As I mentioned earlier, the meters were installed. They worked like they were supposed to. They provisioned, commissioned, and built correctly. During a power outage, we had some friends and family meters that were sprinkled about the district. And a couple of our meters happened to be in an area where there was a power outage. And so we were able to see that outage and see when the power came back.
They arranged that.
But we were, yeah.
They turned off a commissioner's power to see what would happen.
That was Commissioner Logan was one of them. So yeah, that was not planned at all.
But it's one of the primary features.
It is. It is.
We yeah. Like a lot.
There's a lot of great things we'll be able to do with that eventually as we get more visibility with that. All right. Also, our monitoring tools, Commissioner Wolf, you asked about the operations team. So their tools, their reporting tools are working well, and now they're working on improvements for them for monitoring the meters that are out there. And we were able to, during this time, we had a hypercare meeting that was led by Brad Acey and Doris Payne, a daily touch point where we were able to look and see, okay, any issues come up today with meter installations or our systems, processes, and able to really address those quickly. And so we were able to, if a critical or high defect came up, we were able to get those addressed quickly. The team did a great job resolving that.
Did you call it hypercare?
Hypercare.
What a great term.
It is. It got our attention, so we loved it. Okay, a couple pictures here. We have the first two, Amy Galen installing an electric meter at one of our customers' houses. And second picture is a water meter that's being installed. And then our customers, they just can't help admiring their new meters. And so that third picture, we've got just a random customer enjoying the new features of the meter.
And I really don't know, I have a clue what I'm looking at.
You're waiting for the meter to go around and around.
All right, thank you, John. All right, deployment phase. So this has to relate to our base stations, our network deployment. So we have 112, as of this slide was produced, it was 112 base stations installed out of 149, 75%. Over the last week, six more have been installed, so we're at 118 now, so almost 80% of our base stations are installed out there, so we're really excited about that. Permits, that's always something that we're working on. 125 of our 149 sites have permits. We have applications submitted for Everett and Edmonds. We're waiting to hear back from Everett any day now. And regarding our base station deployment, as I mentioned, friends and family meter deployment areas, we're working well, and we're focusing on the Bothell Mill Creek area right now, and those systems are working well too. And regarding supply chain around this part, all of our material is here for our remaining base stations that we have to install. So there's there. Is there any question? I don't know if I popped over anybody there.
I just want you to know I have nothing to do with this delay in Edmonds.
Okay.
I'm not involved.
We understand. Thank you. So upcoming activities continue. These installations, roughly three per week, we'll start running out of sites, and we'll just have two areas to remain on that that have outstanding permits. And risen challenges, yeah, we'll continue to work with the city of Edmonds. We're working with contracts and purchasing, working with legal and our government relations group to continue a dialogue there so that we can eventually get these permits approved. As far as big wins for our base station deployments, again, accolades to the great team that work these. Their processes were very streamlined, telecom standard, line department did a great job involving these. And Census, who's the meter and base station vendor, stated that this deployment was had the best quality that they've seen. So it's Census is part of the solution, but the district definitely, these teams, the district are definitely part of it too. So they did a great job.
That's really saying something. You got it. I know Seattle City Light, you're using Census.
Yes. Puget Sound.
Puget Sound Energy?
PSE.
Well, my son has Census. My son in Seattle has Census, but that's for gas.
Yeah. Sorry, I meant Tacoma has the Census.
But not Seattle City Light.
No. Oh.
I was just relating to my son's house.
Okay.
I saw it said Census, but I don't know what company. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. Let's see, other big wins for Big Station Network. All the friends and family water and electric meters began communicating as soon as they were installed. Regarding our general installation that started in August, all those meters are functioning well. Those are down in the Wapa Mill Creek area. And our water department started in a rural water system out at Sultan Skylight Tracks. And so all those water meters were replaced, and they were all communicating well with our AMI network. Here's a beautiful picture of one of our base stations. This is out at Granite Falls Reservoir site, and so this will provide great coverage for the area there.
Can I ask a question about that symbol on the pole? Is that just indicating transmission, or is that radiation, or it's not radioactive, is it?
It's not radioactive.
It's just saying.
It is a radio signal.
Radio signal, that's what I thought, I just, that's it.
Okay. All right, any questions, other questions up to this point? Right.
No, I don't have any.
Mr. Lovett, do you have any questions?
I have none at this time.
Okay, we'll now turn the time over to Tim Mapp, who's going to be talking about communications and benefits.
Good morning, commissioners. We continue to focus on our communications with great help from our corporate communications team. As I reported last time, we did have our John letter go out to all of our customers that did generate quite a few questions, came into our call center. We're seeing those numbers die down now as customers have gotten their answers. I also had the pleasure to work the Evergreen State Fair alongside Commissioner Logan and our corporate communications intern, Alex Walters. And my personal experience was, it was actually the most common point of conversation that I had with customers. So I was really appreciative of the work that CorpCom and our facilities department did in providing a display for us to work with and talk to our customers.
Great display, because that kind of was a leader.
Yep.
A lead in to getting them to.
I agree. It was very nice for me to be able to pull somebody over and say, hey, let's walk over and let's go look at some of these meters that we've had. Super helpful. I know there are probably more fairs, more town festivals coming up, and corporate communications will be representing at some of those. As I have mentioned in the past, we still will have regular communications going out, deployment communications going to customers. So Commissioner Wolf, that 90-day letter, that's where the information about opt-out is part of that three-month letter that customers get before their meter comes out. That's also followed by a 14-day postcard and then a three-day email.
I just want to tag on to what Tim said. I was so impressed. Very, very, very high percentage of the customers that came up to the fair booth knew about Connect Up, and their only question was, when are they, you know, mostly they wanted to know when they're getting their meter. But I was just impressed at what an effective job the communications group had done. And I forgot to mention it when Aaron presented this morning at getting the word out. I was really surprised.
Yeah, very good set of interactions I experienced. Most people just curious and wanting to know more. One of the things that Kevin and I wanted to bring to you is that we are delivering benefits. When we talked, we've used the term day one benefits, and so we wanted to make sure we shared with you that these things are happening right now. We are providing 15-minute electric interval data, 1 hour water. It's available on Snowpad already for customers who have their meters. We're getting that consistent 30-day billing period. We have Commissioner Logan requested a change in his billing date. We were able to change that for him. That's one of the benefits that helps people kind of align their paychecks to their bill dates. Remote meter reading for reduced carbon emissions. Estimated bills are a thing of the past. With this kind of a system, and then we also will have that remote disconnect reconnect option to help speed up service response times for customers. One of the things, you know, a couple things that we're actively planning right now are time of day rates. You've heard about that in previous commission meetings, and then integrating meter status verification functionality into our outage management system. So our energy control center operators can actually ping a meter to see what currently its power is. These are some sample screenshots out of our website, out of the mysnowpod.com. So you can see different kinds of charts that make it easy for customers to start evaluating their own electricity usage.
Can you walk me through one of these puppies?
Oh, that's telling me. You bet. So in the upper left-hand corner, by the way, these are all This is my screens. These are my, this is my meters. So this is real life data here. So what I've done is I've got 15-minute usage intervals graphed out there in the blue. The red line is temperature. So I can kind of compare how temperature is affecting my meter, my usage every single day. I also know my family patterns of usage. So I know, can kind of tell what's going on in the house and correlating that to what I see on, yeah, on my graph.
You have a heat pump.
I do have a heat pump, and I've got a slide I want to talk with you about that. On the right is a kind of a summary by hour of the day.
Okay.
So I can see kind of, now I can look at patterns and compare hours of day. And then the bottom left one is days of the week.
That one I got.
Okay, yes. So my wife does the laundry in our house, and she likes to do laundry on Mondays and Fridays, and I can tell. I can tell that from this usage. Not that I'm monitoring her, I'm just evaluating. So here is
a losing situation.
Yes, it is. I'm gonna shut my mouth now about that.
I saw this slide and I was interested in it, but I didn't know if it was yours.
Yes, this is my house once again. And what I wanted to show you, so this is that similar to that first graph. I grabbed two separate days for similar time periods, again, showing the red being the temperature, and the blue lines are my electric usage. And you can see on the second graph, the first graph, as people getting up in the morning, that's actually looks like a day when my wife probably was doing laundry mid to late morning. The second graph shows you see a big jump starting in the evening, about 9:15 that evening. It was hot. Our house was warm. We made the decision to turn on the heat pump and cool the house off. And so we could clearly see what was going on in terms of our electric usage. I was able to talk to our snowpad team, or my snowpad team, and say, you know what, I would really like to see that in a cost. I'd love to see, instead of just kilowatt usage, I'd like to know what that cost me. I was able to manually calculate it, but it's going to make for a great conversation. It already did in my house. We're able to see. I know.
Well, is that something that can be done? Or?
Yes.
Or,
yes, it can be done. So we've got it on the list of
question about,
yeah,
the heat pumps in situations like this. Do you have a steady like 72, 74? What's your?
No, mine, I do have my program to go up and down at different times in the day. Yeah.
So if it's extremely hot, you don't change.
I could. See, that's another further conversation that I could have in my house and say, you know what, maybe it doesn't make sense. Let's not turn it down so cool on such a hot day. Let's bring it down a little, but not all the way.
Well, I was told, since we have a similar system now, not to set it too cold, because that can cause damage to your condensers or something. You know,
interesting. I'm not a heat pump expert.
Oh, okay.
I have to leave that to them.
Well, some days I did probably turn it down too low. Somebody said don't go below 74.
Oh,
so I don't know. I'll check it out with. Do you have a heat pump person on staff?
I'm sure we have people who know much more than I do.
Another day,
another
conversation. But I would like to know about that.
Okay.
And I think anybody with a heat pump.
I think our energy efficiency department is going to have so many opportunities to take information like this and turn it around to customers. This has already spurred, you see that first graph. I did not realize how much hot water was using in terms of my energy use. And so that has already got me thinking and talking with my wife about maybe some changes we want to plan for in the future and considering a heat pump water heater.
Kudos to you that you have those good conversations around changing your wife's behaviors.
Yeah.
We are really enjoying ours.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's good to know.
But I don't have any smart devices.
Yeah, neither do I. Not yet. that may be another conversation in the future.
Yeah.
Another slide that I wanted to share with you, another win, and this is Kevin Labering's water meter. And what he noticed was on the left that there was continuous usage. Continuous usage is an indicator for a leak. And he was able to see that and find the leak, address the leak, and then the graph on the right shows that no more continuous usage, you see, see a drop off there. So great wins, very excited to experience that for ourselves and be able to share that with our customers in the future. Mm-hmm. I think our energy efficiency department, water department's gonna go crazy, all that they can do. So next steps, we'll be coming back again for our next quarterly update in December. We mentioned the electrician contract. You'll hear more about that this afternoon in a future meeting. And we'll continue to provide updates regarding our meter deliveries, our base station deployments, general meter deployments, and onboarding of our exchangers. That is the conclusion of our prepared presentation. Any other questions, which Kevin and I didn't address?
Thank you. I don't have any. Do you have any?
No, I don't.
We should have welcome.
You know, just a comment that you saw the graphic a couple pages before of Tim's house. I've really enjoyed looking at that data for my house. And I think I might have mentioned it before, but we have two small portable air conditioners. And it's dramatic how much our energy consumption goes up with just those two relatively small devices on. So it will be great to be able to toggle and look at the cost of what that's costing. So anyway, thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Wolf, I was wondering if we could take a short break.
Okay. 5 minutes. How about right now? Let's come back at 9:57. 5 minutes. It is now 9:57 a.m. and we'll resume our meeting.
Right. Next is an update on organized markets and Adam Cornelius. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
You might have to lift that up.
Good call. Thank you. So my name is Adam Cornelius. I'm a principal utility analyst in our power supply department, and I've been leading our efforts on organized markets. A lot's been happening, so I'm just here today to provide an update. So, as you know, the PUD staff has been engaged in regional efforts to set up an organized day-ahead market, or multiple different efforts. We've been working hard to make sure these offerings work as well as possible for the PUD and the region. So today, just to put a little context around this, today we make between $50 million to $150 million per year in market transactions, both on the buy and the sell side. And so in a future day-ahead market, we'd expect this to grow as more resource dispatch is accomplished through the market. So this is a big deal for us, and we have to be ready. So we're going to talk about some of the important updates of where things stand, as well as a snapshot of what the next 3 to 6 months will look like. One of our top priorities has been in preserving multiple market options, and we're getting close to seeing what those are going to look like and to entities starting to make decisions on which market to pursue. So it's pretty exciting. And just, you know, as a reminder, we're looking for a reliable market with unbiased governance structure and appropriate price formation for power and transmission that's compatible with the value of hydropower. So we've covered this more in some other slides, but just wanted to give a quick reminder of some of the potential benefits to the PUD and to BPA of joining an organized day-ahead market. So first, you know, we expect to see new opportunities to market surplus power and purchase lower cost power when we need it, partly due to the bigger and more diverse footprint. The optimization engine that the market runs provides a least cost solution to serve load and a greater ability to sell our flexible hydropower in its most valuable periods. On the transmission side, we've all heard about challenges in our industry with building additional transmission that we need. One thing a day ahead market can do is to help maximize the use of the system that we have by utilizing all the transmission made available to it as needed. And finally, due in part to the first two items, we do see that an organized day ahead market should provide a greater ability to integrate renewables. So again, due to that geographic diversity different resources that can come online at different times, the automated dispatch of generators up and down to respond to variability works more efficiently than manual capabilities. So there are two main day-ahead markets that are under development right now. First, on the left, we see CAISO, California Independent System Operators Extended Day-Ahead Market, or EDAM. This would essentially be a full integration with CAISO's existing day-ahead and real-time markets, and participating balancing authority areas must also be EIM entities, or Energy Imbalance Market entities, as Bonneville is today. CAISO just filed their tariff with FERC, and they'll go through a multiple month process through approval, and they're also working on implementation activities with the entities that are have initially stated their intention to join EDAM. And so that's PacifiCorp, and then just recently I think two of the other California BAs, which is LADWP and Bank and SMUD, all announced that they're kind of planning to go in that direction.
Good question.
Yeah.
Why do the Southern Power Pool markets not incorporate EDAM? Or do they?
So the Southwest Power Pool markets, so CAISO and Southwest Power Pool each operate an RTO effectively. So CAISO does that for the California footprint,
sure,
more or less. And Southwest Power Pool operates an RTO in the east.
So within their own RO,
RTO, regional
transmission
organization. Sorry, yeah, I got it. I got acronyms.
So within their own, they do use EDAM.
So EDAM it stands for Extended Day Ahead Market.
Right.
So both RTOs have a day ahead and a real time market,
okay,
that work together. EDAM is CAISO's name for extending its own day ahead market,
mm-hmm,
that exists in California out to the west. So it's a specific term for CAISO's, what CAISO is calling its day ahead market.
So they have something comparable.
Markets Plus is Markets Plus and EDAM are extremely comparable in their scope.
Okay.
The difference is that CAISO's EDAM, just like EIM, works together with CAISO's home market. Markets Plus is, at least to start, standalone. So whatever footprint is Markets Plus, that will be the area that is the market is operating for. Eventually, and I think that's maybe the expectation, but that's a future step. That market footprint could integrate and with SPP's kind of main RTO footprint that's in the east. But that's a future step once that market stands up. If it
I just needed to get some clarification.
Yeah, and we probably could have done a little bit more of the refresher slides, but there's both these markets would have a day ahead market and a real time market together.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they're really pretty similar at the high level.
No, thank you for asking that question.
I get these mixed up moments. I'm fascinated by this, frankly. I mean,
it's pretty interesting stuff.
It's exciting.
So Markets Plus, is in its phase one development process. So they're working through building up a tariff right now.
Right.
And you know, when we last came to you, we were seeking to participate in phase one, and we are participating in phase one. But since that time, there's been an effort to expedite the timeline from what was originally planned. And so they're anticipating, we're all working towards essentially a tariff filing in Q1 of 2024. And so for go live, you know, these timelines are probably, these dates are, you know, targeted years here. It depends on a lot of factors, including how, you know, how long the FERC process takes and whether there's some back and forth needed between FERC and the market operator, and then, you know, how implementation efforts actually go in practice.
You're so good at tiptoeing around. difficult questions. Anyway, I just
you have
a difficult
question.
Really good.
But yeah, please, and of course, interrupt me with questions anytime. Difficult or not. Okay, so, you know, the PUD staff has been engaged in all these efforts. So I've been leading up our internal cross-functional organized markets team, includes members from power supply, power scheduling, regional transmission, and legal. And so we, you know, we meet very regularly. We're constantly kind of providing updates back to our team and kind of planning our response as we engage in these market efforts. We have participated very actively in the Markets Plus process as we're phase one participants, and then in EDAM as well. And that activity has been a little bit more through our trade groups, Public Power Council, and the Public Generating Pool, PPC and PGP. So that leads right to the next one, right? We work really closely with those trade organizations, and you know, they have such great staff expertise, and so we you know, value that and those partnerships.
Excuse me, what is PGP?
PGP is a public generating pool.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so those are probably two, at least in these areas, the two trade groups that are most actively engaged in these processes that we're members of. And so Public Generating Pool is a group of, I think, I forget the exact number, 8 to 10 of the public utilities in the Northwest that have some substantial amount of their own generation.
Like the mid-Cs.
Yep, yep, exactly. Mid-Cs, Seattle, Tacoma, and some of the other slice customers that have their own generation as well. And then we've, you know, there's lots of other less formal venues. We've got multiple standing meetings between Bonneville and Public Power to work through these issues as well to help make sure we're all on the same page. Because it of course, needs to work for us, but it absolutely needs to work for Bonneville as well. So, you know, we think it's really important to be engaged in these discussions. You know, we need to have a seat at the table in order to both, you know, provide input into these market design efforts that, you know, will both have benefits as well as potential risks for our customers. And we want to influence that design to be, you know, as good as we can, while recognizing that it's all a big regional coordination and cooperation is needed. You know, the market expansion is likely to happen with or without us. And, you know, we do anticipate, as kind of we mentioned earlier, that we should anticipate greater liquidity for participants in organized markets. Part of that will come at the expense, likely, of bilateral activity that we engage in now. And so some of that might dry up. And so this is, we saw this with the EIM. That was one of the drivers for Bonneville to join EIM. And you know, that type of impact we think will be magnified within organized day ahead market, especially one that Bonneville and the PUD didn't participate in. A lot of our trading activity happens on that pre-scheduled timeline, what we call it in bilateral market. It's the equivalent of the day ahead in these organized markets.
So are members of Wakuda at the table? Or some of them? Not as a market.
I would say we're one of the few
utilities.
LSE, you say that's within utilities that are within Bonneville's balancing authority that is really actively at the table.
Interesting.
I would say that they are likely engaging. So Public Power Council is also a phase one participant, and so they are probably the most direct entity representing those utilities.
Thank you.
And, you know, of course, we've been supportive in the past and continue to be supportive of Bonneville assuming a leadership role in these conversations, right? We want to help them be at the forefront of the market design that's happening, and not just sort of taking what they have to at the end after because they need to because of those liquidity issues. And you know, we think having their largest customer be at the table is you know, a good signal that region is supportive of these efforts. And of course, knowing what's happening in these conversations will help our ability to plan. So turning specifically to each of the two market updates efforts that are out there, we'll start with SPP Markets Plus. So as I mentioned, right now we're in a stakeholder process with the primary focus to develop a tariff filing expected early next year, which was accelerated from the initial plan. So tariff is, you know, a large document that includes the rates, terms, and conditions that the market will operate under. Essentially, it's the rules for how the market functions. It has to be filed and approved by FERC. Once that tariff is filed, we'll transition into protocol development. So protocols, also known as business practices, are the more detailed procedures that really implement those rules in the tariff. So they have to be consistent with the tariff, but they go into a lot more detail about how the market will actually operate. Again, those are developed through a stakeholder process, but they don't need to be directly approved by FERC. We're active in this phase one. Work groups and task forces. We'll go into that a little bit more of that on the next slide. And then phase two is more about implementation efforts. So once you have the way the market's going to work, everyone needs to set up their systems to be able to work with it. And so then there's this period from once the tariff's approved to these actually joining and participating in the market. Timeline is still to be determined, but you know, in the kind of 1 to 2 year ballpark. So this chart shows at least the stakeholder portion of the Markets Plus phase one governance structure. Most of the substantive work occurs at the work group in green and task force in purple levels. We have voting members on the starred groups, so I'm our member on market design and congestion rent task force. Ian Hunter is on the greenhouse gas task force. Kim Hagen is on the transmission work group, and Garrison Marr is on the resource advocacy task force.
I have a question about the greenhouse gas and the congestion rent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of those are some of our big challenges.
Absolutely.
And so those groups are working on solutions, or I assume reducing, trying to find ways to reduce.
So The goal of the primary goal of the Greenhouse Gas Task Force in the Market Plus context is to develop the rules for the market that will work well with any greenhouse gas programs established by the state, by states. So for example, Washington's Climate Commitment Act has a have an invest program that puts a price on carbon emissions used by Washington, used to serve Washington load. That includes generators in Washington, as well as imports into the state.
So do we have a government relations person working on the greenhouse gas issue on that team? Because so much of that is different. Mm-hmm. California, Oregon, Washington, I know they're all different.
The rules are definitely all different in different states. I think our focus has been, and really because the likely, based on the greenhouse gas pricing programs that exist today are in Washington and California. Others have, other states have different rules and targets for reductions, but the specific area that probably most impacts the market design that the market needs to take into account when it's choosing which resources to dispatch are these programs that implement a price on emissions. So that's Washington and California. In Markets Plus, the primary state that is in the footprint that looks like it will be at least at the start is Washington. And so most of the focus of that task force to date has been on how market rules and work with ecology's, Washington Department of Ecology's rules for the Climate Commitment Act. We definitely work to keep our government relations folks abreast, but we don't have we have one member on the task force, and that's Ian Hunter. So we don't have nobody has multiple people actively on the task forces, but you know, we're definitely working closely with government relations on both the ecology side and the market design side.
Seems like you'd have to.
Yeah. And I'll get in a bit of a sort of chicken and egg issue with that one specifically, because ecology right now, as we're working on these rules for the market, is has kicked off a rulemaking process for how the Climate Commitment Act will work in an organized market. And so it'll likely be a little bit iterative, I think. So.
Sure.
But you know, we're doing our best to stand up rules that we think will work with where ecology is going to land. There might need to be adjustments as the process moves forward. This has been a pretty large effort. Each of these groups is meeting every 2 to 3 weeks. These are 4+ hour meetings, and you know, there's also kind of behind the scenes coordination to get to kind of check in with our peers and counterparties. And then at the MPEC level, Market Participants Executive Committee in yellow. So once decisions are made at the lower levels, it gets up to the Market Participants Executive Committee for approval. And so Joe Fina is our member of that committee. Joe also stood up kicked off a less formal subgroup focusing on tariff language among different attorneys of the members and SPP staff as well. That's been really focused on, you know, a legal review of the tariff language. And then finally, above the MPEC, not shown here, is the top level of governance is a Markets Plus Independent Panel, or MIP. Right now, on an interim basis, it's made up of a subset of SPP board members, but ultimately that will transition to a permanent body. Members are selected by the MPEC. And really, we're seeing this pace of, you know, I mentioned that pace, that's been just accelerating as we approach tariff deadline. So we're all pretty darn busy with this. Some of the key focus areas is, I think I touched on that. We talked about this one. Thanks for your good question there, Commissioner Wolf. You know, GHG accounting and market compatibility with the Climate Commitment Act, right? And really the primary tricky issue there is how to account for market imports into Washington. So right now in a bilateral world, we have a specific arrangement, but when we purchase power, we know who the seller is, and there's this kind of bilateral relationship between.
And we know their credit ratings too.
Yep, absolutely. Yes, all that is true. But in terms of the accounting for emissions, that contract shows that relationship. In an organized market context, the way it works is sort of all generation is dispatched to serve all load in the footprint. So it's a little bit more challenging to determine which of those imports were used to serve Washington. Contracts can serve as the basis for that, and we're working through how those kind of rules work. The second one, right, compatibility with the Western Resource Adequacy Program, or RAP. We expect that in Markets Plus, RAP will be, RAP participation will be required. You know, will include us, which we're planning on, as well as Bonneville. And, you know, we think one of the benefits of Markets Plus is that we provide a common resource adequacy foundation to help ensure everyone's bringing their sufficient supply to the table. We're working on, you know, how these programs work together from both sides, frankly, the resource adequacy program side as well as Markets Plus.
Seems like the congestion rent challenge would really benefit from the SPP Markets Plus. Because they have a lot more transmission than we have in the BPA system.
So on the, so absolutely, you know, regardless of which market, the usage of transmission rights and how congestion rent is allocated is an important issue to us. We are a large holder of long-term Bonneville point-to-point transmission rights that we use to manage our load service, we use for our own marketing when we're at times when we're sellers. And we do at times when we aren't using all of our transmission, we recover a portion of those costs through resale of those rights to third parties. In that, some of that activity will continue in this context, but in an organized market, we would expect to make some, most, potentially all of our transmission available to the market to optimize in return for a share of the congestion rent. So in an organized market, you have often, when there's congestion, so insufficient transmission to get all the generation to the load that might want to get there, you end up with prices that are lower where the generation is. Market is paying a lower price to the generators than it's collecting from load. Price is higher, power is more valuable at that location where the load is. The market does its optimization. So that results in what's called congestion rent, some extra money that the market has collected, and that tends to get distributed back to those who hold transmission rights, partly as reserved to help offset entities' exposure to congestion rent, the congestion costs that they might face. In terms of which market, so whichever market Bonneville joins would expect to have access to most of Bonneville's transmission, whether it's Markets Plus or EDAM. The design of use of transmission and congestion rent is still very much under discussion in Markets Plus. It's an important issue we're working on and trying to make sure it works well for us and for Bonneville. I don't know that we've done a full comparative analysis with EDAM because, again, the Markets Plus design is just not complete yet. So that's something, part of something we're taking into account. We expect Bonneville will take into account as sorry to make our decisions. Does that help? I hope it was.
Yeah, I was
feel
just,
free to follow up if you
I
have.
I guess I was hoping that Market Plus direction would open up more transmission for us through BPA or not. I mean, maybe this is just for another discussion, but it's very complicated, and I'm sorry, I'm just too interested in
this. I think the need for more transmission access is important.
Yeah, I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
That we're going to have to build more transmission. It's very expensive. So I was hoping Markets Plus would be reciprocal, that we could also use some of their transmission somehow. I don't know how we connect. That's the part I don't.
So I think that likely. So yes, so I think in both cases, whether a Market Plus or EDAM, we would anticipate, most all utilities that are joining to make the vast majority of their transmission available to the market, and there is that expectation of reciprocity, I think. But the market footprint is part of the consideration there, I think.
Okay, gotcha.
To tag on to that question, Adam, this isn't going to give, no matter which path Bonneville takes, access to renewables is not going to be different under one organization than the other, right?
I think it will, it may be a matter of which. So the transmission system exists as it does.
Right.
And there is, we will, whichever way different utilities decide, whichever market different utilities decide to join will sort of determine the footprints of those markets. You might expect some greater efficiency within the market footprint, but there will still be trade between entities in markets. If both markets come to be, there'll still be trade between entities in Markets Plus and entities in EDAM. Entities that might join one market might have transmission rights across another TSP system. Hypothetically, Bonneville were to join Markets Plus and PacifiCorp joins EDAM. PacifiCorp has transmission rights today, and we have transmission rights across Bonneville's system that help connect its eastern part of its footprint to its western part of its footprint. And we would probably expect they'll use those transmission rights to help their EDAM participation. So there will, I think the short answer to your question, Commissioner Logan, is no, not directly, but how different utilities decide. So the decisions that all the different utilities decide to make will impact what transmission and what resources and what loads are in each footprint.
That makes sense. I guess what I was coming with is SPP doesn't bring new transmission to our region.
Correct.
Right.
So,
okay.
But one thing that both these data markets may do is by more explicitly by valuing the congestion, or showing the value or cost of that congestion, may help demonstrate a little bit more transparently where the need for new transmission is. See, my boss maybe wanted to step in as well.
Hey, just quickly, this is Garrison Morris, Senior Manager of Power Supply, and we might be getting more into the weeds, than these big topics here, but, what these markets are really going to do is more efficiently utilize existing transmission, right? So these markets aren't going to build any new transmission. They might compel people to comply with rules for having adequate transmission. But at the end of the day, the resources that are in the footprint are the resources that are in the footprint. What these markets are trying to do is most efficiently dispatch those resources across existing transmission lines. So both markets really, really similar. But just
kind of think of it as like a Uber and Lyft, right? Both are ride hailing markets there, and we're trying to see who has the best rules, who's going to help us kind of meet our overall goals kind of the best. And so we want to have a really great Uber, a really great Lyft at the end of these processes. And these are the big topics at a high level, right, that are important for what both of those platforms need to have for us to be really successful.
So, excuse me, about that. So SPP has their own transmission throughout a huge area, don't they?
East of the Rocky Mountains, but not really in an area relevant to us here in the West.
So how do they operate if they don't have transmission?
Well, they're not going to use, they don't have any of their own transmission. They're just going to price in the transmission into the dispatch of the market.
Certainly revealing my ignorance here. But, you know, I'm just trying to sort it out because, and the reason I'm interested as a commissioner is that people are always saying, oh, I'm so afraid we're not going to have enough, we're not going to have enough energy. And I'm thinking, just hold on. I'm going to be able to buy and sell with lots of other entities, and that's going to help us meet our demand. Am I wrong?
I would go back to this Uber Lyft thing, right? Like Uber Lyft, they don't own the roads, but they can see how fast different paths on those roads are going to be. They know what cars are out there and where people are trying to go. And so they're kind of most efficiently moving those cars to those places, just like, you know, a market operator. For just a day ahead market, they're not going to own the transmission lines, but they'll see the congestion or the capacity on those transmission lines, where the resources are and the loads, where those resources need to go. They will use math, the power of math, to get that most optimal solution.
That's a great analogy. Thank you.
And I would just add on, SPP currently operates an RTO and a market in Oklahoma, Kansas, parts of New Mexico, and other states, just like CAISO does in California. So what SPP is doing is really making a play, an alternative to the day-ahead market for the Western states, the states that are now engaged in this process. So they don't own the transmission, but they operate the utilities that are in Oklahoma, Kansas, again, these variety of other states. They operate and manage their transmission grid and their power supply.
Thank you. Okay. This is supposed to be an educational meeting.
That's cool. But no, it's a good question. And I think, you know, maybe the difference is that an RTO would do is kind of have a single entity that's doing some of those transmission planning processes. At this stage, the day ahead markets are still individual TSPs managing their own system, lots of, you know, plenty of connectivity between them, and the market operator will, whether it's SPP or CAISO, will sort of optimize the use of that transmission that exists.
But ultimately, it will help us meet our energy demand, right? Okay, so
we absolutely anticipate that it will
have faith, you know,
be more efficient at doing that.
Thank you.
And BPA is a huge holder of transmission, and that's why we have so much at stake in this, as BPA has a huge amount at stake in this.
Sure.
Yeah, this is Jason Ziskowski, Assistant General Manager for Facilities, Generation, Power, Raise, and Transmission. And one thing I'll just throw in is, you know, as we see electrification coming, we're going to need new transmission. So regardless of EDAM or Markets Plus, someone's going to have to build new transmission. Mm-hmm. Either one of those markets, as Garrison and Adam have talked about, they'll optimize the use of it and make sure we use it as efficiently as possible. But we're going to need new transmission to get the new generation resources to the load here on the west side of the Cascades.
Thank you.
So
couple of other of our key focus areas, flexible reserve products. So this is essentially where the market pulls back a little bit of the most optimal energy in the current period to make sure there's enough supply in future periods to manage uncertainty. And this is something that is that hydropower, among other generation resources, types of resources, is particularly well suited for. So we're pretty interested in the design of these flexible reserve products. And then finally, I think we've touched on this a little bit, is the treatment of market seams. So if you have, for example, two different day-ahead markets in the West, we know there will still be trading in and out of the market's footprint, and between organized markets with entities that maybe don't join a market. And on the one hand, the seam can represent an inefficiency, but it can also improve if you have effective management and coordination across the seam from both sides. And it's been in the East, there are multiple RTOs that exist side by side, and they manage to work together to deal with these seams. So turning to EDAM, again, very similar in scope, and they're a little bit ahead of Markets Plus process-wise. They just filed their tariff a couple of weeks ago for EDAM, as well as for what they call day-ahead market enhancements. EDAM, as I said, extends their day-ahead market to their EIM, to any EIM entities that wish to participate in EDAM. And their day-ahead market enhancements are a group of flexibility and capacity products that they've added to their day-ahead market that the Pacific Northwest has long advocated for, but it had historically been a contentious issue, particularly for California load. The design didn't go exactly how we might have wanted, but the products are in place, assuming the filing is accepted by FERC. Upcoming, they have some price formation work groups that are considering enhancements to ensure appropriate pricing for supply and for load. And maybe this is a little more anecdotal, but I think we've seen improvements from CAISO in their stakeholder process. It's been a lot more stakeholder driven early on. It seems like they're really listening to stakeholders in the early stage before CAISO puts out a proposal. And I think this is probably a direct response to SPP's approach, which is highly stakeholder driven. So just a couple other processes that are ongoing. Bonneville, a couple months ago, kicked off a day ahead market policy process. So this is going to go through Q1 of next year. And it's a policy direction that will include some indications of whether Bonneville intends to join a day ahead market, and if so, which option. And they will put together a high level business case to support that direction. We've been supportive of that process, and just a little more context. This indication, rather than a firm decision, we think it strikes a balance, given how rapidly these processes are moving. So a full record of decision that Bonneville will likely ultimately need to make will take a long time, and there even at that point there may not yet be sufficient info. But an indication from Bonneville can be an important signal to other utilities that are making their own decisions about the viability of market options, right? Bonneville is a very key player in the Northwest, and other entities may kind of follow the direction that they go. So this helps kind of put them in a leadership rather than a follower role. It helps them to start to take steps towards joining one market or the other, and probably a start of a case for a future record decision that, you know, they ultimately likely need to make before joining a market. You know, we are, they're putting together right now, their initial phase is to put together some principles. We have, through PGP and Public Power Council, have, you know, put together some principles for day ahead markets that, you know, we'd like to see them use as a foundation. We want to make sure that their business case includes not only the impact on Bonneville as a whole, but on individual product, power products and transmission products and their customers, as well as ensuring that statutory rights of preference customers are reserved. There's some interaction here with other processes. So, right, we are in the midst, as we've heard in other meetings, of this post-2028 provider of choice upcoming contract. And so to the extent that Bonneville joining a market means that might need to be some changes to their power products. There's that sort of cross that linking between the two processes. And actually, since we put these slides out, Bonneville just announced a new provider of choice workshop series that will start addressing how Bonneville products such as Block and Slice will work in an organized market. So we've been advocating for something like that for a while, and so we're excited that that conversation is going to happen. A couple of other items you might have heard a little bit about. So there's been a bunch of studies on organized markets, state-led study, market studies. What's up here? This was looked at the cost and benefit of difference of various market outcomes. So just an imbalance market like EIM, or a day ahead market like these options we're pursuing, or a full RTO that's even more integrated. They looked at a couple of different footprints, west-wide, sort of California being isolated, one where the eastern part of the West, Colorado and Utah, were separate. They considered these different footprints and different market outcomes. The study did show some incremental benefits from having a single market versus two markets, but a lot of those benefits were based on capacity savings and did not consider really the existence of the Western Resource Adequacy Program, and we expect that the existence of that program will likely offset some of those savings. There's other studies that are out there and will be forthcoming. There's a group of utilities that Bonneville is a part of called the WMEG Western. I couldn't remember what the acronym stands for. Sorry, I don't have this one. But they are looking, Bonneville expects to use that study. So far, it hasn't been released publicly, but they expect to use that study in their day ahead market process. So, and we'll likely continue to see more as other entities are making their decisions. But all these studies are really dependent on some of the assumptions that go into them. A lot of that is unknown, unfortunately, or can't be foreseen those necessarily. Second, there's a letter that was just released from several, a group of individual state regulators equivalent to the UTC on market governance. This letter essentially proposed the development of a new independent entity that would be governed by representation around the West, with the goal of becoming a market platform for all states in the West, including California, and would contract with CAISO for market services, including the EIM and EDAM, and potential future services leading towards an RTO. So one of the stated goals of this letter is market efficiency through elimination of schemes and a faster path to an RTO. It's not really clear, at least to us, that pathway is viable. I think there's some probably open questions around the governance would work and the relationship with CAISO. whether it's more likely to result in a west-wide RTO effort than the proposed Markets Plus expansion, or whether it's more likely to result in design improvements that would provide substantial net benefits relative to the designs that are being put forward today.
And does that mean, is that plural, like regulators from different states?
Yeah, so it's I don't think any individual commission, I don't think any commission like signed off on the letter, but multiple individual commissioners from, the UTCs and their equivalents across the other states signed off. So I do believe that the three Washington commissioners did sign, and then it's some individual commissioners from different states.
We can find those on the web, maybe.
Yeah, we can get you that letter. And it's pretty, my view, it's a little bit vague on how this process will play out. It was kind of an initial attempt, I think, to stand up something different.
Adam, I'm pretty concerned about this. I read the article in Clearing Up recently, and is this a Cal ISO thing to try to force more utilities into EDAM, or that's the suspicious part of me. It seems 11th hour, and I'm so surprised that those that regulate the public the for-profit utilities aren't engaging with those of us that regulate the public utilities.
I think it was surprising to me that it came solely from those regulators. It did come from, I don't think CAISO or anybody from CAISO signed it, but I do believe it did have a signatory from the CPUC. It's unclear. I think a lot more will shape up on how this is going to play out, right, in the next few weeks and months.
Do we have concerns that it's going to derail SPP Plus or EDAM for that matter?
Well, so it's interesting that in the letter, specifically calls out contracting with CAISO to provide market services. So
yes,
it feels more likely to derail one effort rather than another if that's what happens. It's not clear to me how, well, given the members, we need to take it seriously, but I don't know how it will play out or how that kind of contracting will work between this independent entity and CAISO, which may have its own interests.
Okay, is there any fear that state legislatures will get involved in supporting something like this or making a decision one way or the other?
I'm not sure I would necessarily speculate on that, but I think I'm sure it's something we'll be watching and paying attention to.
Yeah, I think we certainly will be paying attention, but I don't think there's a great risk of that, at least at this point, with the information that we have.
Great.
As you're likely aware, there have been multiple attempts in the California legislature to open up CAISO's governance that so far have not succeeded.
Right.
Any more questions on either of these items or anything else before I get to the kind of next steps?
I have no more.
Okay, so we have a busy next few months. Through the rest of this year, Markets Plus Phase 1 participants will be, including ourselves, will be working to get this tariff ready for filing. Bonneville's going to be really ramping up its own policy process around day ahead markets, and we'll expect to see a record decision on their post 2028 policy, which is one of multiple steps in their post 2028 kind of series of processes. Turning to next year, we'll get a anticipated tariff filing from Markets Plus, as well as kind of probably near immediate transition into working through protocols and a phase two part of their development. You know, we don't know exactly when EM will receive FERC approval and how that process is going to play out since they just filed. We don't know what the kind of reaction will be from FERC. But you know, could happen as early as early next year. And we'll get you know, a conclusion from Bonneville on their day ahead markets policy. And I think that's going to give us a pretty strong indication of you know, the direction that they'll be going, which we are linked, you know, pretty completely with Bonneville's decision, given that we're a load serving entity within their balancing authority.
BPA, excuse me, is BPA independent in that decision making process, or the tied into the Congress? Does Congress have to approve? No,
I think not Congress.
He's shaking hands.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. So I would say they're I think it's the administrator's decision.
Okay, that was
And again, this isn't a record decision. This will be something that is their indication, their leaning of the direction they're going to go. And so, you know, at that point, it will be a good time for us, I think, assuming their direction is to join one of these markets, is to really kick off our own market readiness efforts. We're thinking about it, but it's hard to go too far down that road given the stage of the process we're in right now. But you know, there'll be a lot of work to get ready, and it will affect a number of areas of the district. You know, operational timelines will change and processes will change. We'll likely need to set up some communication systems with the market operator. We'll do some analysis on how we will participate with our resources. There will be maybe some different considerations, risk, settlement processing and validation will be a pretty extensive effort as well, I think. So there'll be a lot to come that we, you know, anticipate really getting moving on once we have a direction signal from Bonneville. You know, then we'll start to see others make similar decisions. The footprints will likely take shape. You know, there's a lot of entities that are probably on the fence between the two options right now, and so there's a lot of different directions these things could go. And then go live of the two markets will be, you know, in the coming years, 2025, 2026 timeframe, probably at the earliest. So, you know, in conclusion, this is just a really important effort for the district. You know, our wholesale market activity is large and important to us and helping keep our costs low, and so we, you know, we do expect additional benefits from these efforts, and we're working hard to, at this point, have multiple options to choose from and multiple good options to choose from, and so with that, I'd be happy to take any other questions.
I have none. Commissioner Lorben, do you have any questions?
Yes. Well, first of all, Adam, thank you. Great presentation. I've been looking forward to us having this conversation for quite a while. I guess, you know, if I read the tea leaves, it seems like we're going to have both. And, you know, one may start before the other. Is that going to cause complications for Bonneville? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think whether we have both will, you know, depend on probably the, it seems very likely to me that EAM will exist, right? PacifiCorps joined EIM back in 2014 with nobody else. They're directly adjacent to CAISO. And I think they would have the ability to do that with EDAM without other entities. Connectivity between the Northwest and the Southwest, absent CAISO and PacifiCorps, probably depends on a few entities joining. You might be worth it to have a Markets Plus with only the Northwest, but probably a lot of the benefits are unlocked if you have that connection to the Southwest. So it seems fairly likely to me that we'll have both options, but I don't know that that's a given at this point. I think some of the timing on Markets Plus and that speeding up of the process has been in part a response to trying to at least stay reasonably close to EDAM's timing.
Right.
The RAP is already going, right? We're already participating in the RAP, yes.
Yes.
Okay. And does that affect the energy imbalance market?
No.
Okay.
I'll say no. Okay, not directly or super.
We've put everybody else to sleep here, so I think I will.
I'm not asleep.
I'm sure you're thinking, shut that one up.
About the third time around the question again.
You do have another question?
No, I don't. No.
Wow, that's a lot. It's a lot to process, and I appreciate it all.
Yeah.
And I apologize if I ask questions that are maybe should be at a different time, but to me, in my mind,
it's all connected. You ask good questions. Yeah, it's all related, and everything was connected to this. So.
You just want to be well enough prepared to answer our constituents. Not in full detail, but essentially. Okay, thank you.
Hopefully this was helpful.
Yes.
Yeah, extremely important topic and extremely complicated topic. Good questions, good discussion. That's it for the presentation. Great job, Adam.
Hold on just a second. It is now 10:57 a.m. and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m. Thank you all. Have a good lunch.